So I'm 28 years old. The founder of my company and business partner dies. The business, dies. He dies. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh.
He's also my dad.
Oh, no.
A month later, 9/11 happens. And then a month later, the banks come in. I'm 28 years old. The banks come in and call all of my loans due in full. $8.5 million worth of loans. So what do I do? I'm like, the only person that could sign my loans would be my mother, who's a widow, and I have 500 employees, payroll's $500,000 a month.
Oh,
I'm 28, I have two kids, and I have a Buick Regal, and I don't have a pot to piss in. And so what do I do? I don't know anything about mergers and acquisitions, legal strategies. I don't have a human resource department. I don't have an accountant. I'm doing $25 million a year in revenue, and I have nothing. What do? I work. I go insane with work. And I live 7 hours away from Atlanta. I hire an Atlanta law firm. Mm-hmm. I hire the biggest law firm, Alston & Byrd, in Atlanta. You know, they say fake it until you make it. Well, that's what the hell I did. I faked it until I made it. And a lot of miracles happened. I ended up getting the most amazing HR guy was introduced to me. And he brought an IT guy. And he brought a CFO and a controller. And he brought an entire team. And then within a year and a half, we basically put a whole management team together to support the size company that I had, and we refinanced the company. But that meant driving 80,000 miles a year, going to all kinds of fancy dinners. I was a good operator, but I had no idea how to run a company. But I had to learn.
Wow.
I had to learn real quick. So my name is Gary Cooper, and I'm an honorary insurance guy.
Insurance dudes are on a mission to escape being handcuffed by our agencies.
How? By uncovering the secrets to creating a predictable, consistent, and profitable agency sales machine.
I am Craig Pretziger.
I am Jason Feltman.
We are agents.
We are insurance dudes.
Boom! That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, welcome to the show. That is an incredible story. What kind of business was it?
It was home health care. Home health care, wow. Where we send nurses and therapists out to people's homes.
Always demand for that, huh?
Yeah, it is. I grew up in nursing homes, and as a kid, that's a pretty strange childhood.
But, yeah.
You know, I decided when I was in grad school, I wanted to keep people out of nursing homes.
Yeah.
And what a cool thing to do. You know, I get paid to take care of people.
Mm. That Keep is so out. Cool.
Yeah. Yes. I had this total unrelated side story. I had this job delivering medicine for the pharmacy.
Yeah.
In high school. And so it was fun. You know, a bunch of the high school guys had this job, and we'd have to go to the old folks' homes sometimes.
Yeah.
There were multiple times that I went in there and there was somebody on a stretcher with a tag on their toe.
Oh,
and I was like, I don't want to go there. Like, I did not like going there.
Yeah. So that I would spend 10 hours a day as a kid in those places.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was my dad started a pharmacy that was exclusively his customer. And so that's all we did. And so as children, there was four of us. So we delivered to those places exclusively.
Wow.
Wow. So when did you start that business?
So that was 1996. So we're going on 30 years now.
Wow. And then how long did it take you to get to the size you were when you were 26?
That was really only 3 years, man. So I mean, it was blowing and going, you know, at a very early age. So you know, I love that saying, we all stand on the shoulders of giants. So my dad was a giant, and he was a really cool giant. He was a very quiet-spoken, soft-spoken, generous. He didn't have all the trappings of materialism. You know, he drove hand-me-down cars. He was just truly a giant. So we were able to build on that very rapidly. But it also meant, you know, this young 24-year-old punk was out busting his ass, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like he could open doors, but that doesn't mean they stay open.
Right. You know,
that meant somebody was out there busting their butt. So I averaged about 60 to 70,000 miles a year in my car. And then I would run 50 to 60 miles a week to stay in shape. And then we were starting a family at the same time. And so it was just all out, you know, and still I was a young guy and we were still partying and hanging out and going to football games on the weekends. And so life.
Yeah.
Wild. That is crazy.
So you were partying back then. But this is way before when you decided that it was time to end that career.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So what was that turning point? When did that happen? Because that's always exciting, right? The crash and burn.
The crash and burn story?
Sure.
Oh, gosh. So 10 years of running the business, like after my dad passed away, we quadrupled the businesses. And just the American dream story. You know, it was just truly the American dream story. And it was, I would call it, you know, for the topic we're discussing today, I would call it total self-sufficiency. You know, I was relying on me or others. I didn't realize how much others were helping, but I felt in my mind, I felt everything was on me. And so I would work my butt off and take it home and leave a notepad beside my bed. I don't know if you guys ever did that, leave a notepad beside my bed. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd be scribbling stuff down. And, you know, alcohol was a very useful tool for me because it would keep me up longer. You know, I had to do a lot of entertaining at night with bankers, buyers, sellers, because I was buying companies too. I was selling companies. There was private equity companies. There was people buying me. You know, there was pharmaceutical companies. There was, you know, there's always dinners Monday through Friday.
Wow.
So that included, you know, wining and dining. And then on the weekend, by that time we had four kids and I would come home and my wife would be like, I don't care how much you've been out. I've been stuck here with four kids. We're going out. And I'd be like, okay. So,
oh man.
So, you know, it became a lifestyle. It was, you know, at least 6 days a week that, you know, there was dinners. And so, I don't know. It just kind of slowly crept up on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was just always this grind Monday through Friday and hotel rooms and all that stuff. And then Friday was like, my wife needed to get out. She needed a relief. You know, raising four kids is harder than what we do, in my opinion. And so I called myself in the book a do-aholic because I always had to be doing something.
Yeah.
You know, that was my first addiction, was freaking doing stuff, man.
Yeah.
You know, I was the biggest fundraiser for the governor. I was always doing stuff. And so alcohol never really interfered with my life until I had back surgery. And then I think depression came in because that first thread I was talking about, self-sufficiency, I couldn't be self-sufficient when you're laying in the bed for at least 6 months.
Wow.
It's pretty damn depressing. And then I went back to the doctor and I'm like, I'm more miserable after the surgery than before. And he said, no wonder, because you have to have both of your hips replaced. And I'm 44 years old. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I didn't take the pain medicine like a lot of people. I was really scared of that. I think growing up in the pharmacy and seeing all that stuff in my lifetime, so I just drank more, you know, because alcohol was such a good tool for me until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And so I drank more. And then, I mean, what would relieve pain? Alcohol? Well,
right.
Then the tide switched where alcohol was causing the pain.
Right.
And, but I didn't realize, it was like, well, alcohol, I would just drink more. Maybe it'll go away. And then I drink more. And then it's kind of like I just kept going deeper in the mud.
It's just the cycle.
It's vicious.
Yeah.
I call it like a drug dealer loans you, you know, enough fun until it starts reeling you back in. It's like bait.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so alcohol did me like that. It was like that creditor that lent me enough money until finally it started reeling me back in. It's like, all right, you owe me all those fun times. All those fun times are coming back now. Now pay me back.
Right.
And so at two more hip replacements, and then one went bad. And so I didn't even get the chance to do the right hip. And in between those is when I'm like, all right, that's enough. Yeah. I had hurt enough people. I'd embarrassed myself. I'd embarrassed my family enough. I'd embarrassed my business partners enough. And I was like, all right, that's over. That part of my life is done.
Like that moment when the clarity comes that you realize, holy crap, I got to end this thing. Cause it's just, you come up with every excuse beforehand, right? Like, oh, well, maybe I'll just drink on the weekends and, you know, all the different things that come up. And then it's just finally that it's so clear and so obvious that the only answer is to no longer do it.
Well, I don't know how it worked for you, but I ran out of lies.
Yeah.
I ran out of runway. And I wasn't the person that I ever intended to be in my life.
Yeah.
And I certainly wasn't the person that others intended me to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's kind of the landing spot.
Sure.
And so that was going on 7 years ago. And when things started reversing for me, I had never invested in myself.
Right.
Mm.
I had invested in businesses. I had invested in maybe skills that I needed. Like I didn't know how to run businesses, so I learned how to run businesses. But I never invested in me, like taking time to understand why I do the things I do. Or I don't know about you guys, but I used to wake up with my hair on fire. I would be late. And, you know, I would just jump in the shower, no time to like even think about what my day was because my day was already, I was already late.
Yeah.
And so I would jump in the shower and then I would go into office on two wheels, go into meetings late, be disruptive, you know, and I had to learn like, all right, get up an hour earlier than you even need to. And spend about 30 minutes or more on you and quiet time and figure out how to get out of your own way kind of thing. And that calmness, I didn't realize I was giving that as a gift to others when I went through my day.
Yep.
And so I started doing that and about a year and a half into it, my relationships with others changed.
Mm-hmm.
My relationships in my business changed. I fired myself. We say I fired myself as a CEO, but really I started acting as a chairman rather than taking over the CEO role.
Right.
And our business just metamorphosed and my family metamorphosed. And I can give you statistics to back all that up. And then our best friend's kid killed himself. Yeah, the statistics are the last day of my family's chaos, two of my kids missed 37 days of school. The next year, and two of them were struggling in college. The next year, the youngest was the president, not of his class, but the president of the entire school.
Wow.
They didn't go to the doctor at all, not once. That's evidence.
Mm-hmm.
The other two did amazing in school, and the other one got in any college that he wanted to go to.
Yeah.
Our business went from a valuation of $20 million to $90
million. Wow.
That's just evidence.
Yeah.
And my third hip replacement, you only have two hips, but I had three hip replacements.
Most people only have two.
6 weeks later, I'm in the Galapagos Islands jumping in and out of sailboats after the dip.
Wow.
It's bananas.
It is.
The third hip is the easiest.
Yeah, right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, dude, that's so remarkable. And I love the transition from operator to pseudo owner to actual owner, right? Chairman is like owner status. That's that. Now you're just, you know, helping when you want, or, you know, doing the things that you find enjoyable and being called on at the amount you probably set the boundaries. You just do what you need to, right? Or you don't have to be dependent. Your life isn't controlled by that business anymore in the way that it was in your younger years.
I think that's right. I think what I decided to do was serve them. Mm-hmm. You know, how can I make them more successful?
Right.
And we actually put dollars behind it. You know, how can we make them more successful in their career? We hired a business coach. We changed our mission, vision, and values, and I was uninvited to the meeting.
Nice.
You know, so their voice was actually heard. We put in crazy incentive and stock option plans and things like that, where the people that were doing the work got rewarded for the work. And so we did things like that where, you know, the ownership of the work became actually in the company. And then we partnered with a private equity firm that's still our partner today. And me and the CEO are still hanging out.
Oh, and cool.
That's not normal.
No, usually kind of.
Normally you're put to pasture pretty quickly, and we're still hanging out and I'm talking to you guys.
That's awesome.
As the honorary insurance guy.
They actually followed through with the promise that they said at the beginning, right? Because they all say, a lot of them will say that, oh, nothing's going to change. And
but that's I think they mean it. I think a lot of times it's the owner won't change either.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
I think like, this is my baby. And what are you doing? Yeah. Why are you changing this? And it's like, because you have to let go of it, owner.
You got
to
let go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which is like agents and agencies. My brother-in-law is an agent.
Yeah.
And he's grinding every day.
Yep.
And he's a producer. And it's hard to go from producer to manager to, you know, that's a grind every day. It's a major, major grind. And I have a friend who was a veterinarian and he sold his business and now he's doing multiple veterinarian clinics, and he's having a really hard time not going into 37 treatment rooms and being on that treadmill, you know, and running. And I imagine producers have a hard time with that too.
Yeah.
It's hard to step up. And when you do, it's hard to not get in your way when you make that jump into whatever level it is that's higher. It's hard to not, because it's like that whole, like, what made you good? What got you here is not going to get you up there. And then when you get up there and you make that jump, you still want to do the old things that you did, because that's your identity, right? It's like you have to shed that old identity, whether it's a producer or manager or owner, or you know what I mean? To go up, you have to shed that old identity. And it's, you do have like a sense of loss a little bit, because your identity, I mean, that was who you were and that's who you were proud of. You got to shed it. And then you have this new identity. And sometimes the new identity is a little tough to put on at first, because it's new territory. You might not be 100% competent like you were at the old, you know, your old identity. And I think it's a lot tougher.
I think you're so right. You know, to be quite honest, I had to grieve the change.
Yeah,
I really did. And I know that sounds weird, but, you know, I don't know if women do it as bad as us idiot men, but, you know, I'm one of the dumbest men in the world. And that was who I was. What right. I did was who I was.
Mm.
And that was really, really hard to let go of. And I tell people this story quite often, and I hope it's helpful. it's not that fun to tell people this, but like I went on the beach, you know, we live near the beach. So I don't know if people go out on the lake or they go out on the mountains or whatever, but I sat on the beach for like a couple of days and multiple times cried.
Mm.
And what I figured out is I needed to be needed.
Yep.
It sounds so lame. You know, I'm 51 years old and I'm sitting out there and it's like, well, why did this happen to me? And I'm so blessed, you know?
Right.
And then I'm like some wimp out there. And our business coach was like, you're being a P word. And she said that to me.
Wow.
And I'm grateful to her. She's like, aren't you bigger than that? Aren't you a father? Aren't you a son? Mm. Aren't you a community leader? Aren't you investing in other businesses? Can't you serve your company? Aren't you denying people the dignity for them to grow? If you don't go grow into your new role.
100%.
And I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
So she kicked me in the midsection first and then opened my eyes.
Yeah. But I think it's still good to process those feelings too, right? Like you, you went through that. You don't like to share it, but you did, you got vulnerable and you shared it. And thank you for doing that. I think that's an important piece too. Right. You have to work through it. If something isn't comfortable and you identify and name that it's not comfortable, then move. Right. And then, but it is very helpful to be surrounded by the people that are going to lift you up. And I think to Jason's point, a lot of times, one of the things that will hold us back are those also the relationships that we had when we got to that level. Sometimes those people are playing great at that level. But if we want to get to the next one, we have to surround ourselves with different folks. And that's really hard, right? Because sometimes the people that may have been supporting you or got you there are going to say the things to prevent you from getting to the next one. Not maliciously, but just because they don't see it. They don't see the same vision. They don't have the same drive.
And certainly in the case of alcohol.
they didn't quit the alcohol. So.
Yeah, and org structure, Jason, you're spot on. You know, when you're a producer and you go into management, what Sharon Radacchio told me is that when we're stressed, we go back to what's comfortable.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm the manager and the ship's sailing and it's all smooth sailing. But when the shit hits the fan, I go back down to the producer.
Yep.
And she said, that's where you have to really focus on not going back to what feels natural. And that takes a lot of effort. It's like, I do the opposite. Like my first instinct is to do X.
Right.
And then I'm like, all right, Gary, your first instinct is this, do the opposite.
Right.
My first instinct is to flip somebody off when they cut me off.
Right. Yeah.
But then my second instinct's like, just maybe they're in a hurry.
See, Gary, you and I are about the same age. Jason's a little bit younger. But like it took me 50 years to get to, like, everybody said that forever, right? You got to stop and think before you act, all that, but actually doing it and actually being aware of it and actually catching it is a whole nother thing, right? Yeah. Like just to be able to get to that level of awareness where you can see it as it's starting to happen is game changing. And it's certainly not something I'm very good at yet, but something that needs to be worked on. Right.
I totally agree. I think age has something to do with it, but I think that's a learned skill. So like,
yes,
I wish somebody would have told young Gary that. So like, since I'm an honorary insurance guy today,
dude, like insurance,
it's so much freaking cool.
Well, you said it. Wait a minute.
And I didn't know I could wear a t-shirt either.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, I got dressed up for you clowns. I wish I'd have known.
and then you're like, oh my gosh, how do I get out of this interview?
We normally have good cameras, but the Apple messed that up.
So you know, somebody would have taught me that. You know, I think I could have learned it. But if I'm an insurance manager that used to be a badass producer, I wish somebody would have told me, wait a minute, when you get stressed, don't go back down to what feels normal.
Mm.
Right.
You know, and don't compare yourself to the producer, because no producer likes to hear, well, when I was back in my day, I used to, you know, nobody likes to hear that shit.
Yeah. You know?
It's funny that, like, to go back a little bit, when you talked about, like, you know, shedding the old identity, we do fall back into our ways. There has to be a lot of intention behind what we're doing. And it's like constant intention. Otherwise, whatever we're not paying attention to, we will backtrack. And I mean, it goes with drinking or anything else, right? Like, you have to be like, put a ton of intention behind all of your actions and like where you want to go, what, you know, your mission, your new mission, if it's leveling up in a company or, you know, shedding the drinking or anything like that, or drugs or anything. It's like, now I have to be highly intentional about everything I do to change that identity and become that new person. Because it's not on autopilot yet. And you look at other people and you're like, dude, they have it so easy, but it's like, they've done it a lot, you know, like any action that's repeated over and over and over again eventually does become easy. But we're not there yet because it's our new, you know, venture or, you know, new person that we're becoming.
Once again, I think you're spot on. You know, I heard this quote that most people in business or in the workplace do more planning for their vacation than they do their career.
I don't doubt that at all.
Right? It's funny, but it's true. And I've gone around our office. We have 560 people that work in our company. And I've asked a lot of people that, and they're like, probably, you know, and I knew I wanted to be, I don't know that I wanted to be successful, but I don't know about that. I thought about that as an option of not being, you know, I just was a very driven person. And so, but I didn't think about whether that was right for me. You know, I didn't know whether that was like, if that compass, that drive, if that insatiable desire to be successful, I didn't know if that was right for me. And so 6 years ago, I read Jack Canfield has a book called The Key to Living the Law of Attraction. And I read that book, and it's pretty cool. And it gives you like almost like how to create a bucket list. And then when I was doing it, I was like, I don't really want a bucket list, but I'm better at running my businesses than I am my life. So I created what you're talking about. I created a mission, vision, and values for Gary.
I love
and
that.
And then a 1 year, 3 year, and 7 year plan for my life. And I tell you, the most important thing that's come out of it that I wasn't expecting is it allows me to say no. Like, if things aren't on that list, let's say an investment in a business, somebody comes up with this hot investment. Hey, man, you need to get in this thing. It's so sexy. It's the sexiest thing. And I can look on that list and say, it doesn't meet any of my core values. It doesn't meet the mission and vision of my life. It's going to distract me from my 1 year and 3 year plan. It's going to take me away from my family. It might interfere with my mental health. I can't do it.
I like that.
I had no idea that would be the benefit of it.